And we're back on the rule of three. Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. We're going to be talking about the In-N-Outs later. We're going to be talking about one person leaving and one person coming back. And we'll tease it from there. Brian Miller on the other side of the microphone.
Hello.
And as always, I'm Tim Slagle. Brian and I were going over in the pre-show. We were trying to figure out something in the news that we wanted to talk about. And the only thing that we could find was something that we did not want to talk about. And that's North Korea.
And we realized, by the way, I thought it was an interesting kind of separate – I never thought about it, but you know, we were saying – there's not a lot of middle ground news anymore. It's either like a stupid presidential tweet or a celebrity got mad at somebody. Who cares? Or it's like nuclear annihilation is imminent.
Or Chris Pratt and what's her face?
Yeah, Chris Pratt and Anna Faris.
Anna Faris, yeah.
People took that like they were getting a divorce personally. You know, like
No. I think it was. I actually think it was different. I think it was the classic celebrity thing. Is like, ooh, I got a chance now.
Oh no, but people are upset. I'm like, I'm happy. I would love the chance to go on a date with Anna Faris. It's probably not going to happen, but you know, my chances are better than they were now. And if Chris Pratt asked me out to Chinese food, I wouldn't say no.
Yeah. It's somebody, a friend of mine said that he was talking and he was talking about some survey or something of how many women would sleep with Chris Pratt. And he said, you know, it's Chris Pratt. I probably would.
Yeah, he's really charming. Imagine how charming he is. Imagine he like knew your name and was looking you in the eye when he said that stuff. Oh, hard to resist.
And, you know, what the heck? There might be a palimony suit in your future, so.
Oh, maybe if North Korea shoots some nukes over here, and if you were like somewhere near Chris Pratt, you'd be like, hey, look, we're all about to die. We got about 45 minutes left.
Yeah, there's no way there's these are the only options we have left, Chris. Just you and
I can do some lines from Scary Movie 2 if it helps you out.
So anyway, what we realized when we were discussing North Korea in the lead in is that for a while North Korea was funny.
They really were a big punchline.
It starting I think with Team America with Kim Jong Un's father was hilarious in the movie.
Yeah, so Ronery and
it was a big joke, but now it joke on you.
Yeah, because you know before it was like we like to focus on all the whole thing where it was like, you know, the state media in North Korea would be like Kim Jong Il played a round of golf and he hit 18 holes in one, and it's like, oh, that level of delusion is so funny. And now it's like, now that level of delusion can be shot at your face.
It's there was something charmingly retro about the May Day parades that they would throw and show off their armaments, which are were the peak of World War II technology that they were able to smuggle out of China at the time. And it was, but now, yeah, it's they have caught up. They may be 50 years behind, but 50 years ago we entered the space age. So it took them a while. They now have ICBMs that can reach the West Coast, and they probably have warheads they can stick on there. And
hopefully they didn't see the new Dark Tower movie, or they'll use them immediately.
And what's worse, to make things worse, Kim Jong-un is not really a stable character.
He kind of makes you yearn for his pops, doesn't he?
Yeah. He loves to annihilate his enemies creatively.
Yes, that he does. When he lined like his like when he lined a bunch of his dad's old advisors up in front of like those big Navy guns and like shot him with cannons.
Yeah.
It's like, oh God.
Yeah. Yeah. Or what was the one he just who was that he just took care of in the in the airport?
It was his uncle or his cousin, right?
Yeah, he hired models to rub their face with nerve agent.
Yeah.
It's that one kind of creeped me out, because if you're just walking off a plane in an airport and a beautiful woman comes up and wants to rub lotion on your face, you're probably not going
you're probably I'm going to assume she's looking for $500 is what I'm going to assume.
It's
I live in Minneapolis. You're more way more likely to have a male senator from Idaho want to rub lotion on your face in the Minneapolis airport. Larry Craig, it's got a spritzer out.
But
you think about like walking through like a makeup counter at Macy's. You know, they got those atomizers and they're blasting people with the makeup and the cologne. You know, nerve agent.
Wow, you shouldn't have said that too loudly.
It freaks me out. That's the plot of the first Batman movie. That's what the Joker does in Michael Keaton Batman and Tim Burton.
So anyway, it's a good thing we can take amusement in this because now it's not. And I was really hoping when all those rockets were not making it off the launch pad, was hoping that the reason why they weren't making it off the launch pad is that we had something up there.
Oh, sure.
And that we were just kind of going, no. But it doesn't seem to me like it, and I was hoping that it was, you know, it was a real big secret, that nobody was going to take credit for it, that we had the ability to take those out, and that's what was happening. But it doesn't – there hasn't been a failure in quite some time.
No. They've been on a bit of a roll that way. And I actually heard something really interesting about the way we were screwing around with Iran's nuclear capabilities. And the U.S. wrote this computer virus that infiltrated their centrifuges that they were trying to spin or whatever.
Oh, that was...
And what they would do was... Oh, yeah. But what they would do with these, when they were controlling these, they would either speed it up too fast or slow it down, but they would never do it consistently. And so the Iranians just thought they had screwed up their own equations. So not only were we stopping their progress, but we were convincing them that the progress that they had made was not successful.
Right. And that was...
Pretty brilliant.
Yeah. No, that one was absolutely brilliant, what we did over there. And I was kind of hoping that we had sort of the same thing with North Korea. But what it kind of reminds me of is that underground Hitler clip that people have been putting... closed captioning on for probably about 5 years. It's where Hitler, where Hitler's looking at the map and says, "Well, you know, we got the forces coming from here," and then it was Mein Führer.
Yeah.
I could almost picture Trump sitting in the Situation Room. And they go, "Yeah, well, we'll just hit him with those space missiles, those anti-ICBM space missiles we got." And it's the joints of staff, chiefs of staff go, "Mr. Trump."
Yeah,
there are no anti-ICBM space missiles. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, everybody but Bannon, leave the room.
Yeah, it is genuinely freaky though, and it's weird how quickly overall in global terms how quickly North Korea went from joke to in you know a couple of 3 years probably.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember thinking when Il died and Un took over, thinking, I don't know. that seems bad. Like, that doesn't seem like a lateral move.
Yeah.
Because you think, like, the child of a guy who's lived in a bubble of delusion. Well, he's the child of a guy. So I feel like the delusion keeps getting more exponential.
Well,
removal from reality.
There's a theory I have, and I guess it's not mine uniquely, but three generations is pretty much the limit, and it's especially in the U.S. for wealth. The first generation has the ability to create the wealth, but the wealth allows that person to marry a bimbo. So then you got second generation, which so you got half bimbo, but you got daddy's money, so you can marry another bimbo, and you're probably competent enough to be middle management. And then you get to the third generation, and then you're now 75% bimbo. So you have you have beautiful incompetence on the third level, and that's mostly typified by the Kennedys. Is and it, through history, it's been celebrated. Thurston Howell the third.
Sure. Oh, yeah, that's
Was
true.
like that, where you have these fabulously, I don't know how many generations down Paris Hilton is, but
You feel like she's a fourth?
Yeah, she might actually be the fourth. That might be, yeah, that might be the downfall, the fallen. But that's my theory. So Kim Jong-un is the third, so that he's he is that exact incompetent, that exact level of bad combination of wealth and incompetence, but throw in a pot inherited power.
Well, I would say it's more three generations removed from consequence. But speaking of big red buttons, so we got to hit the big red button at the end of the segment. Both knew I never had a chance to get her, but that's beside the point. This used to be a friendship, but you made it a battleship.
And we're back. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about someone who is leaving. But in this topic, we're going to be talking about someone who's coming back. And the person who's coming back, probably a good news for a great segment of the American population. Mr. David Letterman has agreed to do a six-episode series for Netflix. It's going to be.
I'm very excited. I gotta say, very excited.
It's going to be. It's going to be long form interviews, six of them. So it's probably he'll pick six friends or important people, and he'll sit down for a full hour and talk with them. Which
for a sneak preview of that, by the way, if you go, it's online on YouTube. Norm Macdonald has a talk show, and he does an hour long interview with Letterman. That, of course, ends up being kind of just a back and forth. You know, they kind of interview each other.
Huh.
It's fantastic.
Is
it? It
was
great. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I watched it last week or the week before. It was terrific.
It's I would have to watch that, I guess, before I draw my conclusion now. But it seems to me that I wonder whether Letterman has the ability to go. It has the patience to spend an entire hour with one person without having a Paul to toss it off to or go to commercial or, you know, the ability to say, well, yeah, you're done here. Good night. Thank you. We're going to have,
oh, I think,
we're gonna
I
have
think quite
10,000
the opposite.
Maniacs after this.
I think he's aged really well into a more long form thing. I think he's kind of, I don't know. He's gotten a little more contemplative and I want to say cerebral, not that he wasn't cerebral before, but yeah, I think he's gotten a little more contemplative in his older age and a little calmed down.
Yeah.
I loved early Letterman, late night on NBC. And, a lot of people didn't like the switch over to the CBS show. I still like the CBS show quite a bit, but I loved late night NBC when it was really weird. And, you know, back when he was really mean to the guests if they were dumb, and he would have people like. I love that. Harvey Pekar, and he would have like Larry Bud Melman. He would have like regular people on. You know, it was always great. I always loved how.
Not to mention the skits. I mean,
yes.
the wonderful skits. The guy underneath the stairs, and the
yeah,
the appearances by Marlon Brando, who was also the same guy from underneath the stairs, and he actually Chris Elliott and Larry Bud Melman actually had spin-off careers from the show. That
yeah.
their characters were so strong. Larry Bud Melman was actually touring, and who is it? Brother Theodore. That was another one that I really enjoyed in the early days of Letterman. You know, plus the things, the wall of Velcro, the giant bowl of Rice Krispies, throwing fruit off the building,
throwing all kinds of stuff off the building. Or sending a guy in a bear suit. How many guys in a bear suit can we get to fit in a sandwich shop or whatever? Just film it from across the street.
So yeah, so yeah, all just, those and he did so much. He revitalized Times Square. It kind of became Letterman Disneyland. Is all the business?
Yeah, it's true. His move there kind of coincided with to the Ed Sullivan Theater. Kind of coincided with the kind of Giuliani New York cleanup.
Yeah, but it was more than that. When he first moved, it was well into the cleanup. But Times Square was still, you know, was still peep shows and stuff like that. It was, and after he moved there, they became souvenir shops and sandwich shops, and you know, it'd be much more of a tourist area after he came there. He also, I read an article, I can't remember where I read it, but he is the one who is responsible for the nation's reacquaintance with irony. Is that David Letterman? The sarcasm and irony that came out of that show actually just was absorbed by the American culture, and that we actually look at the world a much different way. And comedy has become much different because of the influence of the early Letterman show. And it is actually he was responsible for a cultural shift in the nation, and that's something that I think he'll always be remembered for. But when he went over to CBS, it just kind of seemed I didn't enjoy it as much. He was kind of tongue in cheek. It seemed to me that he was starting to get downright nasty, and
yeah, sometimes.
And it was no longer funny. It's no longer. It seemed the writers couldn't talk him into doing any of the old, you know, style stunts that seemed so, you know, that for me was such a mainstay of the old show. Is that I don't know if, you know, arthritis prevented him from jumping on a trampoline and sticking to a wall of Velcro. I don't know if it was just age that he didn't want to do that, or he just didn't want to do it and felt he didn't need to because he had a huge contract. And
yeah, no, I agree. And you know, I think he came around. I think he got kind of cynical and you know, maybe a little burned out or just kind of in a rhythm. I think his heart surgery and having a kid just seemed to change his personality in interesting ways that I think have made old Letterman kind of wise and interesting. And he is the last, I mean, we talked about this before, I think. He's kind of the last broadcaster on Late Night, like true broadcaster, carrying on Carson's legacy.
Yeah.
I would also recommend, by the way, my favorite writer of all time, David Foster Wallace, wrote a really great short story called My Appearance, about a woman who appears on David Letterman and how it changes her life. And it's a great short story.
About fiction?
I'm just – yep.
Okay.
He actually got in trouble because Wallace used – it was a big kerfuffle because Wallace used an actual Letterman interview, not of this woman, but of another person, to like situate the woman within the show. But then he got sued for copyright because within the story, to sort of fill out the Letterman section, he used a bit of the transcript unquoted. And it wasn't like plagiarism. It was more like postmodern,
huh?
You know, it was like Paul's Boutique or something. Like most of the story is not the Letterman transcript, but yeah, he got his book got pulled from the shelves before he got famous.
And
the story's really good.
Modern Letterman, I wonder about. I mean, the beard makes him look like he's about 1 year from wearing Kleenex boxes on his feet.
No, he definitely, but it's, I don't know. I think there's also a Hemingway kind of vibe to it as well.
Yeah, I don't see that. I see.
I'm telling you, you got to watch the McDonald thing. Okay. He's not a doddering old coot. He's sharper than he's ever been, I think.
Huh.
I think he has acquired some incredibly hard-won wisdom. I mean, a near-death experience, the blackmail thing, which was fascinating, and the way he dealt with that was one of the smartest ways I've ever seen somebody deal with that big of a public screw up.
I forget the blackmail thing.
That was fascinating. I mean, he dealt with that in a way that I don't think I can think of a single person dealt with something head on like that.
I don't know what you're referring to.
Oh, he was having an affair with one of his staffers for a long time, and then he broke up with her, and then she threatened to blackmail him or tried to blackmail him with the help of another former producer for hundreds of thousands of dollars, and he cooperated with the FBI to get them, you know, to help get them arrested for trying to blackmail him. And then he went on TV and he made a big public thing where he acknowledged that he'd been cheating on his wife and that he, you know, apologized for his shortcomings and explained the situation. And it was one of the great moments of real, just total honesty on TV.
Yeah.
That was later in his tenure.
Yeah. No. I remember it now. I did not remember all the details of it.
But that, I mean, I can't imagine what that must have been like. I mean, that was, like I said, he had the birth of his son, the heart surgery, and that all came within a few years. And I think the guy who came out on the other end of that has kind of reconnected with he's like a wiser version of his younger self. He's the best of both worlds right now, I think. So I think these interviews are going to be really fascinating. And you should definitely, I would recommend everybody watch that Norm Macdonald interview. Because Norm is also aged into an interesting dude as well. And they had a lot to talk about.
Because
Norm Macdonald is very funny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Always been. I remember him from the early days in Toronto. I remember working with him in the early days in Toronto. So it's, yeah, he was always one of the most solid comedians to come out of that scene.
Did he, when you worked with him in the early days, was he pretty locked into that voice already that he has?
Yeah. It was completely solid. It was, the interesting thing for me is that he never made eye contact. Is that he would always look at the rafters when he delivered the jokes. And that,
interesting.
Yeah. And that was, I'm guessing it was because of nerves, but
I would assume.
But it worked. It was kind of, you know, it's kind of like Stephen Wright's kind of deadpan. It was his little niche, so to speak.
It fits his aloofness quite well.
And I think this show fit neatly into 10 minutes.
Yeah. See you on the other side. And on the final segment of Rule of Three, a little bit of a personal life change, sort of small in a way, but pretty big in a way for me. This week will mark the final week that a guy named Chris Wissman is the editor of an alternative newspaper called The Nightlife, which doesn't maybe mean a whole lot to people who don't live in Southern Illinois, which is most people, by the way. It's a very small area, but that's where I'm from. And Chris Wissman gave me my first job when I was 17 years old. My first real writing job. Before that, I got briefly hired by a crooked politician to rewrite press releases to make him look responsible for other people's work. But then he got sent to jail for embezzling hundreds of thousands of dollars for his wife's gambling addiction.
Wow.
So that was job one for me.
That's a nice husband.
Yeah, I think he might just now be getting out of prison, actually.
Yeah, it's what was his name, Mr. Enabler?
That's Dr. Enabler, sir. So I had this weird first job experience, and then this guy went to jail, and I thought, well, what the heck am I going to do now? I'm out of a job. And an ex-girlfriend's mother said, well, this guy Chris Wissman will read your articles at the Nightlife and if you want to send him something. So I didn't think he'd hire me because I was so young. So I didn't say how old I was. I lied by omission and I started sending in some stuff. And he started hiring me as a freelance. And then he said, oh, you know, you should do this on the regular more. And then one day we met out front of a concert of an arena because he had to give me a camera so I could go take pictures of Aerosmith. Because this was back in the day when an Aerosmith show was a huge deal and you still had to have a giant bulky film camera if you wanted to capture that magic.
I might throw in that this was before it was illegal to take pictures of Steven Tyler.
Technically it would have been at this point, but it was press pass, you know. We were media, so I got to stand in front of the stage.
You don't know what I'm referring to here.
No.
Short synopsis is somebody took pictures of Steven Tyler on the beach in Hawaii.
Oh, right. And, his dong dude, was out.
No,
that's
no,
right.
no, 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 no. It was not his. No? It was, no, dude looks like a lady. He has he has the most severe case of moobs you have ever seen. And just Steven Tyler moobs if you want to take a look. Not warning,
or
warning.
You don't, yeah.
You don't want to take a look. And the Hawaii legislature actually passed a law saying it, to making it, it is now illegal in the state of Hawaii to photograph celebrities on the beach.
Huh.
So anyway, just a short aside. It just interesting to me. He handed you a camera. You went in, took some pictures of Aerosmith.
Yeah. But I met Chris, and I remember he kind of looked at me, and he did a double take, and he's like, "Who are you?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm the guy," because I look young anyway, so I probably looked like I was 13. But it was the first time we met, and then we hit it off, kind of like
the Almost Famous movie.
Yeah, that movie was actually really – when that movie came out, I very much identified with it because I had definitely done a lot of that kind of thing to a slightly smaller degree.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, and this was back when newspapers were really different. I mean, you know, it was a different time. It was the late 90s, but, you know, our boss at the time – I can say this now because they no longer own the paper. The soda machine, everybody knew that, like – Diet Sprite meant beer, and so the boss just always kept the soda machine stocked with beer. So you could buy 50-cent beers and drink them while you worked. Everybody smoked cigarettes in the office. Wow. Everybody was sleeping with somebody in the office.
Wow.
And then he dropped this 17-year-old kid into this smoky, beery. It was awesome. It was like the funny thing is, though, Wisman himself never smokes, never drinks, never took a single drug in his life, is a karate master. So like he's like the sober Zen master of this, like, den of, you know,
boy, it's like the newsroom stuck in time. It's like, my God, it's like the front page, it sounds like.
I just watched that two nights ago. That's funny they didn't bring that up. But it was an A&E paper, so instead of being like hard bitten, we were more like hard partying, you know, like half the people in the office were in bands, and you know, a lot of pretty tattooed ladies doing graphic design, and I was so excited to be thrown into the mix of all that, and started writing movie reviews for them. And that's where I've been writing movie reviews ever since. And Wisman has been my editor since day one. I did some quick math, and by the most totally conservative estimates, he's edited at least 1.2 million words or so that I've written.
Wow.
And he's probably closer to 2 million than 1 million, to
be
honest.
What were the first articles about?
First couple were sample movie reviews. I got into the movie thing pretty early.
Uh-huh.
And so I started, within about a year, I became the regular movie guy, and then, you know, I've done that every week.
So it's been movie reviews all along, except for the Aerosmith photography.
Yeah. But I wrote, oh my gosh, I've written tons of articles at bands. I've interviewed everybody from Studs Terkel to Bob Odenkirk to Dick Gregory.
Oh, wow.
To, Paul Simon, C. Everett Koop cursed me out using words that I can't print or say on the podcast because I called him out on selling out his original website to a chemical, like a, you know,
sure.
Food industry people who filled it full of propaganda. Now, me and Wisman have had written a lot of – and Wisman's interviewed everybody under the sun, you know, Rolling Stones guys and, you know, over the years. And because he owned the paper and managed – he's founded the paper – co-owned the paper and was the only editor of the paper for 27 years.
Wow.
The nightlife up until 6 months ago when they got bought out was a family-owned and operated alternative news weekly for 27 straight years deep into 2016, which is pretty unheard of.
Yeah, no, really. That's the golden age of alternative weeklies.
Yeah, I mean, they were there in the, you know, early 90s when it was, you know, John Backderf, DERF, was publishing, one of the first, I think, magazine or papers to publish DERF, who now is a big movie coming out this year. Yeah, I worked with some people who went on to some big stuff.
For those of you who might not know, this Alternative Weekly is right in the path of the total eclipse.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, that's kind of the last big stuff thing Wisman's going to cover before he leaves is we're going to be going down there to visit him. And
You're going down?
Yeah, I'm going to be going down for the eclipse. Maybe we'll have to do a segment on it next week. I'm going to go.
Oh, man.
I mean, my parents live 45 minutes from the epicenter, of the eclipse.
Sure, so. Why wouldn't you?
I mean, we go home every summer for a couple of days, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey. Why wouldn't you? You know what's really funny is a lot of people are going to be traveling, so I hope you didn't think that you were going to be able to stay at a hotel.
Oh, there's no way. My friend John is renting his, and he has a nice house, but, you know, it's a, you know, two-bedroom, nice house in the middle of a small town. He's renting his house out for the weekend for $2,000.
Oh, my gosh.
What it is
mm-hmm. is I blame it all on the Carly Simon song.
Not Total Eclipse of the Heart. What's that?
You're Carly So Simon Vain. Song? And then you jetted off to Nova Scotia to see the total eclipse of the sun. And ever since that came out, the notion of traveling somewhere to see the eclipse. Before that, it's just, yeah, if it happened, it happened, you know. It's get me a cardboard box and some foil and a pin. And that was it. But after that song came out, it became kind of exotic and sounding kind of jet-setty to be able to travel somewhere to see the eclipse.
Well, people are coming from all over, from Europe, and sure. You know it's gonna be nuts. So I guess we're gonna do one last nightlife party with old Wisman. But I'm getting ready to finish up as soon as we hang up here. I'm gonna finish my last movie review, The Dark Tower, and then I mean I'm still technically employed there. I guess I'll still do one next week. For now, feels kind of weird though. I don't know. Do you really want to see Butch Cassidy without the Sundance Kid? I don't know if you do. You know. I don't, but yeah, I would say, you know, like, you know, you have a few kind of mentors or people in life, you know, you can pick out a handful of people. Lewis Lee would certainly be one for me. Somebody who's, you know, done a ton to help me for utterly no reason other than being a sure. good guy and sure. giving me a lot of great advice. And definitely Wisman was the very first of the mentors. And I mean, you know, basically went from being a 16-year-old idiot writing movie reviews to, you know, then ultimately got a job working at the desk right next to him editing a different newspaper. And we were kind of a tag team for a while there, for many years. So, I mean, I'll still see him. He's not dying or anything. We still have email. But, yeah, it's going to be weird. Have you ever worked with anybody for 17 years, other than maybe Lewis Lee?
I've never done anything for 17 years.
Right. The notion, the whole, you know, that's the thing with comics. Like, we like to be fleet and unencumbered, and nothing stays the same. So it's been like it's really been the one constant. Since I've been the last constant thing since I've been a kid, really.
And the one constant thing here is that
yes,
we stop them around 10 minutes. So
yeah, so more hot eclipse talk next week. We'll have to talk eclipse before the big event.
Yeah, teasing next week and all the previous episodes. If you wanted to see the past, that's what'll be the future. If you want to see the past, timslegel.com. The episodes are there. You can follow me on Twitter, also at Tim Slegel.
Yes, and you can follow me at Real Brian Miller with a Y on Twitter and get all the episodes there at BrianMillerComedy.com. Oh, and hey, thanks for listening. Ben Height, a new listener who hit me up on Twitter and said he was really enjoying the podcast. So thanks. If you feel like popping over and leaving us a review officially on iTunes, we'd appreciate it. Ben or Barry or any of the berries. I have some several berries who listen. The berries, we used to call them on my old podcast. So, yeah, give us a review, give us a listen, and thanks for sticking around. We'll see you next week.
Bye.